91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour we focus on the gender gap in high-tech employment. Even in the 21st century, female employment in these dynamic fields lags behind. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Why aren't girls focusing more on math and science? Some say primary school teachers may unwittingly plant a seed against pursuing the subjects in high school. Currently, only about 18% of undergraduate computer science degrees are conferred upon females, and the gap is even greater among hirings after college. We'll speak with three experts on the topic today, and of course, we'll be taking your calls. First, it's NPR and Regional News. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Well, this hour we address the issues of women and careers in science and technology. Only about 15 to 18% of U.S. computer science graduates and technical workers are women.
Today we'll speak with three successful women who can tell us why more females don't gravitate to technical fields. We'll begin with Robin Hauser Reynolds, the producer and director of a documentary video called Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. Actually, it's a documentary film, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Okay, it's a film. She's with us from San Francisco, and we want to welcome you. Robin, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It's nice to be here with you.
Good. Later in the program, we'll hear from Helen Fernetti, a successful lead design computer graphic artist.
And also later, we'll visit with Holly Lichtenfeld, who's an entrepreneur, author, and founder of Bright Girls, a company which seeks to instill business savvy to future girlpreneurs,
it is now. But first, Robin Hauser Reynolds joins us. So hello again.
Hi.
Robin, with women making up at least 50% of the workforce in the U.S., how far are they lagging behind in these fields of technology, science, mathematics, engineering?
Well, and I can speak primarily to engineering and computer scientists.
Okay.
And we're really far behind. I mean, we're at 18%, and 18%. If you think about it this way, 60% of the women that are entering college, entering our universities, are women, and less than 18% of them are computer science engineers or computer science majors. It's such a problem that in just 5 years from now, there will be 1.4 million computer science-related jobs and only 400,000 computer scientists, therefore a million jobs unfilled.
You specialize in Silicon Valley. Is Silicon Valley more open to foreign talent than U.S. women?
No, I don't think so. And we actually filmed a bit in New York as well. We filmed sort of all around. It's just we happened to be right here in San Francisco, so the access was easier. It's actually a global issue. Of course, there are places, Southeast Asia and India, are producing more computer science engineers than we are, and are a handful of other countries that are doing that as well. The U.S. is really behind. We think of ourselves on the forefront of most of these things in technology, but we're really behind in terms of our number of women engineers. I don't think specifically it's that the Silicon Valley has an issue specifically with that. It's a very complicated issue. It stems from, it's a cultural issue. It also has to do with our pipeline clogs in our education system. We're not teaching computer science in our schools. We don't have an accreditation process for teachers. We don't have enough teachers to teach it. So we have a big issue with stereotypes, right? What's the stereotype of a computer science engineer? Somebody wearing a hoodie, 25-year-old white male in the basement, drinking Red Bull and eating stale pizza. Doesn't really appeal to a young woman. So it's a complicated issue.
What sort of accreditation are you talking about for teachers?
Well, you know, in order to get accreditation, there's no accreditation for computer science teacher in the U.S. Huh. And no formal one. So most schools don't offer computer science to their kids. And even if there's, you know, an after-school program or something that they can take in maybe middle school, by the time you get to high school, even private schools, most of them don't offer computer science until you take, say, computer science AP as a junior. So it's a problem then. And then when you have women and men entering 101 classes, right, you think that when you go to college, you can take a 101 class and not know anything about it. Well, the women that are coming into these classes really don't have as much of a foundation and don't know much about it. Whereas the men that are entering those classes have been gaming probably since they were 7 or 8 years old. So they have this underlying knowledge, this foundation of the basics of coding, the basics of logic, because they've been playing Minecraft, they've been finding cheats on the system through gaming, much more than women have. Women have the same access to gaming, except that gaming hasn't been marketed toward them, so it really doesn't appeal to women as much. And by the time they get to college, you really notice this big difference.
Is it marketing or is it just a lack of interest? I mean, is it a lack of interest on the part of girls or women?
Well, I believe there would be great interest if there were games out there that weren't just violent targeting and targeting women sort of as sex objects and things. I think that there's a movement toward more gender-neutral gaming. I believe that that will help things. I think Sims was probably one of the first games that came out that women really did understand and like and gravitate toward.
Which one was that? Which one was
Sims.
That?
Sims.
Okay.
Sims was made by, you know, EA. But I think up until then, you know, and actually now I've just understood that some of the FIFA games are actually going to, you know, champion some women athletes, which is really amazing because women play sports too. But in the past, it really hasn't been the focus. So, I mean, and again, that's just one avenue of sort of this problem, right? It's just
right.
One factor.
Robin, tell us about your own daughter's experience. We're going to get to your film, but before we do, just tell us how it came about, your own daughter's experience that inspired you to investigate the issues behind this problem.
Well, so my daughter was, it's always been a fairly academic child, fairly confident in her academic abilities, and she was a sophomore in college taking computer science because it's been something that's often interested her. And she began to call home with sort of expressing some doubts about her ability to get through that computer science as a major. She said that she was just one of two women in a class of 35. I encouraged her to go talk to the teacher and not to drop the cast of class, you know, before she really knew where she stood in it. She was convinced she was failing. And she really felt like everybody in there knew much more about this than she did. And these were entry-level classes to start with. So finally, she did end up dropping her major. They didn't do a whole lot to try to keep her in it. And at the same time, national and international newspapers were, you know, in my driveway saying things like, hey, grads, you want a job out of college? You better know something about computer science. And then when the White House issued the report saying that by 2020 there'd be 1 million unfilled computer science-related jobs, I thought, what is going on here? Why do we have such a supply and demand imbalance? And it was something that made me look into this. At first, I thought, well, this is crazy. Why aren't they, you know, why aren't we hiring women? And then I realized, well, wait a minute, this is more of a pipeline issue. And then we realized, well, actually, it's kind of a cultural issue. It's very complicated. And then once women do get through the school system, if they can handle all of those hurdles there in the school system to be, you know, less than 18% graduating with a computer science degree as a woman, then you face the misogynistic culture of startups. And that's a challenge in itself.
You know, we have the trailer from your film, which is revealing in and of itself. We're speaking with filmmaker Robin Hauser Reynolds, the director-producer of Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. It's a new documentary about women and the representation in Silicon Valley on Topical Currents, and we have more guests to come. But we're going to take a short break right now, and then we'll come back with the trailer to the film. Thank you. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We're speaking about the gap for women in careers in science and technology, a gender gap. We're speaking right now with filmmaker Robin Houser Reynolds. She's the director-producer of Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. And it is Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And this is a new documentary, and we're going to listen to a trailer. Robin, the documentary hasn't been released yet, is that correct?
Oh, it's on the film festival circuit. So we did screening at Tribeca, and then we went to Bentonville, which is Gina Davis's inaugural film festival. But you're right, it's not out in theaters yet.
Okay, so let's listen to that.
There will be 1.4 million jobs by 2020 in the computing-related fields. Less than 29% of them are going to be filled by Americans, and less than 3% of that 29% are going to be women.
I don't think software engineering is a meritocracy.
Being excellent or being good at your job isn't enough if you're a woman in tech.
The sort of phenomenon of the programmer has really interested me.
Programmer.
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 It's hard to encourage more women to come into an environment that will sexually harass them and not fund them.
As soon as a woman gets introduced, it's like blood in the water.
When companies started putting these full diversity disclosure reports out there, it became very obvious, wow, there really is a problem. This is something that we need to be trying to address.
Women were the pioneer programmers. They've been written out of history, unfortunately.
Grace Hopper came up with the concept of real programming languages.
Coding's magic.
I like coding because instead of us being consumers, we could be like a producer.
In the same way that everyone should know a little bit about law and everyone should know a little bit about economics, you probably should know a little bit about computer science.
Growing up, I was actually a system kid. I didn't know that I could learn how to code like so quickly.
The reason that there's a gap is actually related to some really real structural factors.
Girls aren't encouraged to pursue computer science. They're overlooked because, you know, it's the boys that are good at science and it's the boys that are taking apart computers at age 9.
Most students have no exposure to programming.
Computer science should be a requirement in all public schools.
This is a Rosie the Riveter moment because the jobs are here and we don't have the workers to fill them.
For the digital revolution to truly be great, it can't just be for a certain set of people.
I'm hopeful because I think that the tech industry could move the fastest. If we see the problem, we can debug it.
This is our country, our cities, our communities, our children, our code.
Code. Debugging the Gender Gap.
And that is a film that was directed and produced along with Stacey Hartman by Robin Houser Reynolds, our guest on today's Topical Currents.
Robin, how far does this put the U.S. behind with the paucity of women in these fields?
Well, I mean, one by one statistic, it says that, you know, if there are a million unfilled jobs that we can't, right, that we can't fill in 2020, that amounts to almost $500 billion worth of, it's huge. And the question is, how long is it going to take us to catch up? You know, where do those jobs go if we as Americans can't fill them? Will they go abroad? Or we bring people in to fill those jobs? And how long is it going to take us? I mean, we have Megan Smith in the White House now, and Megan's amazing and doing what she can to turn things around to get computer science into schools. Academia is very slow to respond, and technology is very fast, right? So academia is having a hard time keeping up with this. And I think an interesting issue is that the head of schools, even at private schools that I've talked to, will say, you know, in high school, for example, well, where do we fit it in? You know, do we give up ancient European history? Do we put it into, is it a science? Is it a language? Is it mathematics? And the answer to that is that it actually should be incorporated into all the classrooms. It can be used to visualize a data set in science, right? It could be used to categorize dates in history. It can really be used in all the classrooms. And it's the way of the future. So our kids have got to know something about computer science and programming, just the way we should really all know a little bit about law, a little bit about economics.
Robin, you were successful in penetrating Silicon Valley to make this film and find answers to your questions. Did you find that they are aware of the white and overwhelmingly male makeup of their workforces? Were they aware of it? Like you went to Facebook, Google, you went to a lot of them, or is this unconscious, really?
It was sort of an open secret. They are aware of it. You know, it's really thanks to Tracy Chow at Pinterest. She was the first one that started a website called womeninsoftwareengineering.org, I believe it was. And it's still up there at the site. She challenged everybody. She said, hey, show us your numbers. Let's all admit that there's a problem. She would go to conferences and notice that there were less than 10% women. And so she was the first one to really get out there and blog and tweet about it and put this website out to challenge people to put their numbers. And I think that she had an amazing effect on it because Google, I guess it was a year ago, May, showed their numbers. And I think people are well aware of it. The problem is that in a very small startup, they're just trying to get the coding done.
Right.
They don't have time to think about the color, the gender, the sexual preference, anything of the coder. They just need people coding.
Is it?
And,
go ahead. Please finish.
So I think that that makes it a very difficult thing when, you know, their heads are down and they're just trying to run as quickly as they can with these new companies. The larger companies, the more well-established companies, really don't have an excuse. And I think the issue also is that it's not just that they aren't necessarily hiring women. It's very difficult to find the women to hire. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of poaching going on. There's poaching going on with men, too, because we just don't have enough coders.
Is there an element that's similar to, say, institutional racism, is that it's not overt, it's just sort of a status quo that's maintained?
I think there are a couple different things going on. What happens is that we tend to hire people like us. And therefore, if you're a white male and you went to Stanford, you're going to sort of identify with the man that walks in the room that just graduated from Stanford or is halfway through Stanford and was also a beta, for example, right? Or with somebody who, you know, went to MIT and played lacrosse. I mean, we tend to hire people like us. It's who we're most comfortable with. It's human nature.
Right.
So that's part of the problem. I think that the other part of the problem is that it's hard to retain women. It's hard to hire the first woman because it's going to take a very special woman to be able to handle herself in the startup culture. And once you have a woman there and once you're able to sort of educate the men in the field and your coworkers how to make that a comfortable and welcoming place for women, then I believe it's going to be easier to hire more women and get more women on.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I would think that tech companies would be dying to address this growing problem with all these unfilled jobs that there will be in 5 years.
I think they are. I think that they would like to see more women. The problem is, where do we start? If it's a cultural problem, then it's really an issue because we have to change the image. We're not going to get more young girls in through the pipeline before we can change the image. And I think Hollywood has a lot to do with this. I mean, they can really make a change. We need to see women in leadership roles in science and mathematics and the head of companies so that women and people of color can see themselves in those roles, believe that they can do it. That's a start right there. And you can't underestimate the power of a stereotype and the power that Hollywood has on those stereotypes, right?
Exactly. I just wanted to let our listeners join in the conversation. If you're a woman currently working in tech, maybe you are, or if you're a young girl or young woman and you're interested in doing it, or if you're a man and you're an ally for women in computer science or a company trying to find ways to bridge the gender gap, you can call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org, radio@wlrn.org.
Are there differences, perhaps, Robin, of that some people might say that boys are more competitive than girls, and that is at the root of this?
I don't know that boys are more competitive than girls. I do know that we debunk the whole myth that there's an innate ability to code that's more male than female. Mm. We interviewed two different brain scientists, and they both said, no, there's not, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with it. Girls have the absolute same aptitude given the same education.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make one point that I think is really important. This is not just gender parity for the sake of gender parity. This is an issue about, number one, needing to fill these roles, but number two, think about what your company can be and how your company will improve if you have more diversity at the design and coding level. So in other words, you might have a certain but fairly homogeneous perspective if you are a 25-year-old white or Asian male living in Silicon Valley working on something, right? Great. They made Snapchat. That's terrific. There are a billion users. But how many more Snapchats do we need? And what type of needs are out there from societies and people in society that have typically been marginalized to technology? What about an app that's going to help a woman who's living in a housing project who has got three kids and she doesn't have the time to run around and fill out separate applications for all the different low-income housing? You know, what about having an app that she can use, that she can put in a standard or a common application for that type of thing? What about helping people find clean drinking water? I mean, there's so many needs beyond the sort of me generation of apps that we see so often today. And I think that you need a socioeconomic diversity and you need gender diversity in order to be able to really have that broader perspective and understand the needs of a greater breadth of humanity.
Tell us more about this She's Coding. What is that?
So She's Coding is a website that we started. We really felt like we needed to have some sort of call to action. And it's a website that Jolt Labs in Seattle and Qualcomm have both helped sponsor. It's meant to be a hub of resources for people that want to learn how to code, people that perhaps want to mentor or somebody that needs a mentor. It's a website in development. It's something that we're working on. It's open and collaborative, so anybody that wants to help on the website is able to. And we'd really like to list as many resources as possible on there. An interesting issue that we have here is that we say that we need more women to the pipeline in education. The problem is there are very few universities that can actually handle more women coming in, because it's enormously expensive to expand that department. They don't necessarily have the resources to do that, whether it's physical space or whether it's professors or anything. So as much as we're saying we need to get more women in, the truth is it's a really big economic issue even within the universities to do that. So that's going to make these out-of-school teaching organizations like Hacker School or HackBright Academy much more important and much more valuable. Khan Academy, but all of these organizations that are going to help teach people to code that are outside of the university system are really valuable.
What is the website for She's Coding?
It's shescoding.org.
And that's S-H-E-S, no apostrophe, coding.org?
That's correct.
Okay. And when and where is your film going to be screened?
Well, our next screenings are in Washington, D.C. and Silver Springs, Maryland at the AFI, American Film Institute, Docs Festival. That's on June 20th and June 21st, and tickets are on sale now on our website, which is codedocumentary.com. We will then, let's see if there's another one I can announce. We have a few that I'm not yet able to announce, but we'll have our California premiere in October. We're doing a lot of screenings. One thing I wanted to mention that we're really excited about is that the Department of State, the U.S. Department of State, and also Congress have reached out to me and asked for private screenings.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. We're also going over to Geneva to screen the mission of the U.N. It's wonderful that we're getting the attention of some of the policymakers, because I think it's important for them to also, realize how important it is that we start educating our kids at a very young age about computer science and what a big economic issue this really is for our country.
Well, we've been speaking. Do we have time to take one call maybe?
Sure.
That Robin could address?
We've got Lucy. She's in Boca Raton. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm so excited that I'm on.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I am a web developer. I've worked in
web design and development for about 8 years, and I found that I've had a lot of luck getting new work in small business web development, just being a woman. And most of my clients are women, and I think when I've bid on jobs, I really feel that that's helped me get more work. And I think if more women came into my profession, that they would have a tremendous success. And just enjoying listening to all the facts that you're discussing, and I think bringing in computer science into the school system and introducing it to women and men and girls and boys is the first step, because none of us knew about computer science growing up, and it still is such a new field for younger people. But we all have the capability, and I think that's the first step in fixing this issue. So, but thank you again for having me on.
Oh, well, it was great to have you. Robin, any comment?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right on, and I think that it's the idea of instilling confidence in our girls and our sisters and our, you know, our daughters. I think that is so important. And a lot of us were sort of raised with believing that you're either left brain or right brained, and you're either good at math or art or, you know, science or writing. And I think that the more we instill confidence in our young daughters and say, you know, teachers need to do this too, right? That you can do it. That anybody can do this. Put your mind to it, that you can be good at math and, you know, art and writing and science. I think that's going to really help more young girls believe that they can do this. And so I think it's wonderful that you're hiring women and that you have the success that you're having. And I'd say keep on it and become a mentor.
Well, we certainly want to thank you, Robin Hauser Reynolds. She's the producer and director of a documentary film called Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. Robin, if you'd like to stay with us, if there are any questions from callers, you can do so. Otherwise, we'll say goodbye to you. But we also have Helen Fernetti, who we're going to hear from next. She's a successful lead design computer graphic artist. Quick break. We'll be back with more.
Welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're continuing our program about women in science and technology fields with Helen Fernetti now. She's a veteran lead designer in the competitive creative field of advanced computer skills and design. She's a former Floridian and now works for a large national retailer based in Little Rock, Arkansas. Welcome to you, Helen.
Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Joseph. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you.
Good to have you. So here you are, and usually we don't give age, but in this case we will, right? Okay. So you're 55 years old, and there you are coming out of college. You were armed with just an art degree. Now you're a technical specialist in a Fortune 500 company. So how did you go from having this art degree to where you are now? I know it's a long story, but start us off.
Well, I have to thank my mom for that. My mom was 65 years old. I was probably about 28, and Macintosh had come out a couple of years before that. And she said, Helen, there's something to this. Even if you use it just for accounting for a while, I don't care. I'll even help you get a business loan to buy your first Macintosh. So that was in 88 or so, 86 when I bought that. It was a Macintosh Plus. After that, I did use it for accounting. I went ahead and became a freelancer after a while, working in an advertising agency as a junior art director. And then an odd thing happened, like most of our lives. I was expecting our first child, and I was making a living as an illustrator, and my hand went numb. So I had to learn how to use a mouse. So I had to become a digital graphic designer. So that's how I started off in that, and I used to actually hang out at the local computer shop in Jacksonville, Florida on Saturdays before I had the first child, and they said, Helen, there's something called Photoshop. You got to check it out. So I would hang out there in the back of their little shop and play with the very first version of Photoshop, and sure enough, wow, it was awesome, and I just got, you know, very interested in it, and my mother always told me, you can do anything. She had two girls, and she imbued us with that understanding in our lives that, you know what, don't take no, honey. Keep moving.
So did you encounter resistance? I mean, here you are now going into, you know, a couple of things that usually we did not often see women in those positions. Did you encounter a lot of resistance?
I didn't have any resistance because I was female particularly, but I did find that a lot of the people that were hiring me for freelance and then for other types of jobs that I would go after, though they were primarily women and they didn't understand my qualifications. And most importantly, the organizations that were hiring me didn't understand the potential of what web development could do, that, you know, moving from the print medium to digital. And maybe it was because I'm female, they didn't take a chance on me. But something happened in Miami after Katrina. A lot of the young, frankly, male web designers that were getting paid okay in your market moved off and went to Atlanta and New York City. And I sensed this and went after a position at the Miami-Dade State's Attorney's Office. And made a case for it, and they took a chance on me, even though I'm a woman, and that's really what launched me into going into web development, and now I'm actually a user experience designer.
So what were you doing in Catherine Rundle's office?
I was actually in IT, and what they wanted to do is they wanted to recruit more people out of college to the Miami-Dade market, but our competition was the state attorney's office in Manhattan. And they had a beautiful website that they felt like was one of the differentiators that was attracting them to go to the Manhattan market, even though the cost of living in Miami is a little less than Manhattan. So they said, what we need to have is we need to have a sexy website. So they kind of battled between, will I be in the recruitment side of the attorney's office or will I be in IT? And frankly, the IT director just got his act together a little quicker, put out the want ad, and I applied.
You know, something you said a little while ago interests me. You talked about that women were the ones that were actually, not that they weren't allies so much, but they didn't understand your potential or the potential for what you wanted to do.
Yes, I found that they didn't, they would call and it would sound very stilted. They would use words that you obviously they were like sounding out for the first time. They'd say, do you know how to do HTML? And other technical terms.
Right.
And you knew that you weren't going to be able to get very deep with them, and they weren't going to ask you the kind of questions to ascertain if you were really good at what you were doing.
Well, you've been listening on the phone, you know, to Robin Hauser Reynolds. Do you think times have changed since you started out after hearing all these statistics and the gap that still exists between men and women in these fields?
Well, looking back on my children's public school education, they had no computer science opportunity, and they went to fairly, I felt like, good high schools. So I don't think that changed for either one of them. I have a boy and a girl that are now, I have one that's she's a fashion designer in New York City, and the other studying to be a nurse in Gainesville. I do feel like sciences are just lacking entirely. I totally agree with Robin that women are not encouraged, even though I think technology to both be the most innovative, creative place to be in the world right now. I worked in advertising when I first got out of college. That was the place to be if you really wanted to make a difference and get the message out. It's shifted now. Actually, AFL marketing kind of stilted. They've kind of got caught in their ways. But if you want to be innovative and you want to change things and make a difference, it's technology now.
Is there something that discourages younger girls from tech pursuits? Can it be self-directed from their upbringing or environment?
I do think that from my staff, because all of my staff currently are men in their 20s, I do feel like being introduced to the gaming early on makes them feel very comfortable with logic of coding. And I have had people in the past, females in the past, interestingly enough, were gamers. So I think just, and Robin definitely said it, is that really good role models and feeling comfortable with it is so important. And then an introduction in education of having that reinforced with the curriculum that they're teaching as well.
Helen Fernetti, you're certainly not one to sit back and coast in your career. I saw that you 2 years ago took a Dale Carnegie immersion course. What was that about?
I've just always felt like education is something no one can ever take away from you. And I had the opportunity, being a graphic designer and now being a manager, I felt like I needed to take the opportunity and go to Dale Carnegie and see if I was able to work with my staff better, make presentations about the things that my staff do, and just move on up into the leadership level.
So have you made friends and influenced people?
I do recommend the course. I think it has some really good base skills. It's been around a very long time, but I think there's some core skill sets that they definitely teach you.
Wow, that's good to know. That still can still be helpful. That's pretty old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been around for a long time. Computer graphic artist Helen Fernetti is an innovative design professional with diverse experience in retail, healthcare, e-learning, government, and commercial real estate, engaging user-centric solutions. And why don't you stay with us, too, Helen? We'll have author and girlpreneur Holly Lichtenfeld join us after this short break.
And 46 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and our topic today is women in high tech and scientific pursuits. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, of course. Next in studio with us is Holly Lichtenfeld. She has a 25-year business career, working with a range of startups to multinational companies. Her current endeavor is Bright Girls Company. And we'll get the lowdown on this unique initiative for girls 8 to 12 years old. Welcome to you, Holly Lichtenfeld.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Holly. So here we are now, shifting gears to another generation, and we'll call this the power generation, the one who knows everything about computers, talking about 8 to 12 years old. So that's a switch, and it'll be interesting to hear about them. But as Joe mentioned, you had this successful career working for corporations like Morgan Stanley, Dun & Bradstreet, Levi Strauss. So what was your position in the corporate world?
I actually started out in technical field, so it's interesting to hear this. I have a marketing and finance degree. Kind of the right brain, left brain thing that Robin was speaking about earlier. And so my first jobs were in technical areas. I was a GIS analyst and an analyst in finance. And then I went on to do marketing and product development, VP of marketing level, so on and so forth, and co-founded, it's not listed on there, but I also co-founded a company.
Now, did you feel that as a woman, you were at some sort of disadvantage in any of these companies? Did you receive equal pay, for example, for equal work?
I actually didn't feel that I was disadvantaged as a woman. Sometimes it was harder. Finance, I felt like similarly I was in a minority as a woman there.
Okay.
But now that I'm looking more closely at gender issues in business, I'm starting to realize there's a big gap there and there are disadvantages and women are having a harder time.
So tell us about Bright Girls Company. What is the mission?
So the mission is to empower girls to envision themselves as entrepreneurs, business leaders, and CEOs, because there's a huge gap. For example, one is that women-owned businesses make 25% of the revenue of their male counterparts. It's about $150,000 annual revenue compared to $625,000. And to give you an example, when I go in and I work with young girls, I just was in a school with third graders, and I start my program off by asking them if they know what an entrepreneur is, and if they do, what they think it is. And one nine-year-old said to me, this was just 2 weeks ago, she said, I know what it is. An entrepreneur is a man who works in business. And she paused and she goes, yeah, it's usually a man. And that right there, you take the data, you take an anecdotal story like that, and you see the need just to have these girls envision themselves as a business leader is very, very important. And there's that big gap.
Is there a particular skill that you think is more important than others that girls need to study and master?
Well, I think there's many of them. Okay. And in the book that I've written, I go over just opening them to things like brainstorming. How do you come up with an idea? How do you test that idea? How do you market it? But one of the ones that's really floating to the top for me is the need for girls and women to network. Understand what that is. And in all the things we were talking about earlier in STEM, how we were saying the more there are other women and men who will connect with these young girls as they grow up and help them to navigate their career, and having girls understand how to do that themselves is very, very important. We lag behind in that. There's also data that shows that women are not as good at networking as men are.
It seems to me that it would be the opposite.
Yeah, me too.
The girls would be better networkers than the boys.
You know what? We're afraid to, again, ask so directly for things or really understand how to work the network. There's a lot of information. I just read one article that said that women are much, much more head down doing what they need to do. They don't stop to establish those. And I'll give you a personal experience. This is back when I was in college. I was in student government. Great experience. I got to sit with the president of the university, and local business leaders were actually involved, as well as high, faculty. Did I sit there and get their contact names and stay in touch with them afterwards? No. Great experience while I was there, but no one had sort of told me that that would be a really good thing to do. And if we start to tell girls to do that and open them to this idea, they'll do it in middle school and high school and college, and they'll come out into the business world and they'll know, they'll already have a network and they'll know how to build it.
You say, so that part, I with Joe was surprised to hear that men are better networkers than girls or women. You say it's also important to show girls at a young age that it's okay to take risks. And that doesn't surprise me that girls and women are more risk averse. But how do you teach them that?
Well, I think one of the things is just to have them experience it. So if you have them try something and fail, try something they've never done before, again, whether it's some exposure to business or some exposure to athletics or technology, as we were talking about earlier, just teaching them this concept that it's not whether you fail or not, it's what you do with that failure. Because actually, you should become comfortable with that, that if you're going to do different things, you're going to fail, and it's okay. So just having them have that experience.
If you'd like to join in our discussion, we have some lines open. 1-800-743-9576, or you can email us, radio@wlrn.org.
Okay, I thought we were going to take a... Maybe you're a mother of a young girl who's already a girlpreneur, or anything we've discussed so far in the program, you're welcome to call us.
Well, we do have a caller. We've got George in Delray. He's been on a long time. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
No problem. Worked in the industry for quite some time. I'm a computer science major. Worked in for a couple companies. I was out of work for a while, and a friend of mine who worked in a local high school was leaving her job as a teacher, and she was a very good friend of mine. She told me about it. I started teaching. It was my first experience teaching, and one of the things that I was kind of down about, she had been teaching there for many years. She had never gotten a female student. So mm-hmm. One of the things that I did was I made it my mission. I worked at the middle school on this thing called FLL, is a First Lego League.
Say that again?
A First Lego League.
Okay.
They have some Lego robots, and they build them. It's geared towards the middle school. So I worked on bringing that to the school itself, and I got a couple of girls to join in, and I started talking to them and talking up computer science. What I found is the girls tended to shy away a little bit more and just kind of, I don't know that I can do this, I don't know that I'm smart enough, what if I can't figure it out. And what I try to do with them is say, hey, not just the girls, with everybody, is this is all about failure. You're going to fail. And it's okay to fail. As long as you understand what happened, you keep on going. Now, I'll be teaching again this coming year. I have, for the first time for the school in computer science, I teach both the AP and intro to computer science. For the first time, we're going to have girls entering into the AP and computer science class. So
Oh, that's great.
I like to see that as a small victory, but something that was said a little bit earlier.
Excuse me, George. Holly wants to say something. Holly Lichtenfeld.
Yeah, I loved hearing that you said you're involved in FLL. I actually am as well. I'm a judge. There's three components to it, and I think it's great that you're encouraging girls to be involved. One of the things I saw as a judge, I judge the teamwork component, is frequently the girls would be more quiet in that. A lot of times the boys would really be the ones who are participating. And as a judge, at the end, I get to give feedback to the coaches to say certain students really need to be encouraged to speak up more. And I'm really glad that you were noticing that and noticing that the girls maybe didn't have as much confidence and you were helping to build it. That's, you know, we need everyone, males, females, all of us working together to build that confidence up.
Okay, thanks for your call, George. We appreciate it.
Well, if I could say one more thing.
Okay, we have a couple of other callers, so.
Okay, it's, you were saying that, you know, the woman was saying earlier that 29% of the computer science jobs in 2020 are going to be held by Americans. I think it's very important for parents and for teachers to encourage girls to get into it now, because if demand is high, then people are just going to have to take whoever's there.
That's a great idea, George.
Okay,
thanks so much for calling.
And we move along to Remy in Jupiter. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi there. Glad to be on the show. Lovely topic. I determined at about age 9 that I wanted to own my own business, and I am 65 now, and I've owned this last one for about 27 years. But the biggest difficulty I've found for women in this, referring to networking, is women don't treat women the same way that men treat men. Networking men get consideration from other men. They make deals. They know the game. Women are not as likely to be that favorable towards them. Found that a lot of times they gain weight.
Oh, you're breaking up a little, your phone.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm in the car. But men will bend where women tend to stay by the rules. They don't bend the rules at all. They stick by them firmly. Men will bend a little bit so you can negotiate with them. I find it very difficult in many cases to do business with women. It's much easier to do business with men.
Hmm. And, you know, it's an interesting point. This is Holly. I just read an article this morning that was a study that showed that women tend to be more comfortable and help women peers. And as women, we don't do as good a job working up and working down. And that's exactly the issue with the networking, is you have to be able to be supportive both up and down the ladder. And that's how you think about, as a woman, being both a good participant in a network, as leveraging it, and also being someone who's helpful on the network. And I think you bring up a good point. The more that we do that for each other, the more we'll be able to help each other out.
Well, we might.
Can I add something?
Yes, please.
This is Robin. You know, the other thing that we've heard a lot from women are that because there's so few women at the C-level positions, right, up and upper management and stuff, and in leadership positions, because women have this stereotype threat that sort of know what the industry thinks about them, especially if they're a woman in tech, they have this extra burden of having to go to work and prove themselves. They have to work harder to maintain the same level. They have to certainly work harder to climb. So what happens is a lot of women get their job, they get in the workspace, and they have their heads down and they are grinding. And it's hard for them to look up and look around and notice coworkers that might need some encouragement a subordinate that's coming up.
Okay, Robin, thanks so much. We have to go. Filmmaker Robin Hauser Reynolds. The film is Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. Also, computer graphic artist Helen Vernetti. And author and girlpreneur Holly Lichtenfeld of BrightGirlsCompany.com. Thanks so much to all of you, and thanks for joining us.
And thanks for tuning in. This program was produced by Polly Landis with assistance from Richard Ives, who also handled our calls. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Thanks for listening. Here and Now next from NPR News.